The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you looking for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors, not just across town, but across the country? How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Welcome back to Global Reach. This is a show that helps your business find opportunities, manage risk, and develop strategies for winning in world markets. This week, we do another in our series on leadership, governance, and ethics. Chad Weinstein, president of Ethical Leaders in Action, is my guest, and we are going to look at leadership ethics on the bottom line. How ethical leaders succeed in delivering real value to customers profitably and sustainably. How a vision statement can be turned into a strategic leadership tool, and why single-mindedly pursuing shareholder value can actually jeopardize that very same shareholder value. Chad, welcome to Global Reach.
Thank you, Tay. It's a great pleasure to be here.
So define business ethics for our listeners.
Well, ethics is the way that we make sense and apply our sense of morality. Morality is the human sense of right and wrong. Ethics is how we apply that in our lives, and business ethics is the way that we apply it in our business lives.
Yeah, but businesses are legal persons. They're not human persons. So how can businesses be moral?
Well, it's a great question.
And why
question.
Should they be?
It's a great question. Business leaders can and should act morally. Businesses are expressions and manifestations of the people who comprise them. And yes, legally, a corporate person is a person in that sense. But morally, our organizations are expressions of the sensibilities and the actions of the people who lead and work in them.
So that's well and good, but what does that have to do with creating bottom-line value, sustained value in a corporation?
Well, it's a great question. People, it has everything to do. Business ethics and the way that we conduct ourselves has everything to do with the way that we create value, because we create value by literally creating something that someone will pay for. And sometimes that's a product, sometimes it's a service, sometimes it is an experience. But in all instances, people are more willing to spend on those products, services, and experiences that they trust. And acting ethically is, in fact, acting in a way that is inherently trustworthy. Let me give you a couple of examples. The most obvious is brand. Organizations appropriately spend fortunes to create, grow, defend, and expand brands. Those brands are promises about what other people can expect when they do business with those organizations. And so the brand can include certain tangible qualities, but the brand also includes intangible qualities as well, and some of those include the moral expectations of the people who represent that brand.
Hmm.
I'd like to give you another example as well.
All right.
Very, very down to earth. Several years ago, I was working on two different projects. My organization, as you said, is called Ethical Leaders in Action. And for the first project, my client presented me with a draft contract, and I had questions about some terms of those contracts, so I engaged our lawyers, and our lawyers turned a five-page agreement into a 10-page agreement and sent it back, and their lawyers turned the 10-page agreement back into a 12-page agreement. And when we were done, we had an agreement, we began to do business, and in total, we'd spent about $10,000 on lawyering. At the same time, I began work with another client, and I very proudly presented my draft contract, which I just spent a bunch of money to lawyer up. And he looked at the contract and he said, "We don't need a contract. You lead a small business called Ethical Leaders in Action. If you screw me, we're pretty much done, aren't we?" Trust saved $10,000. When we act honorably, we create opportunities to save on compliance costs. I could also tell you stories about innovation and new product development that could never have taken place except in an environment of trust, and that trust can only take place when we agree to act, let's not just say ethically, when we do agree to act honorably.
Okay. What's the difference between ethics and honor then?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, ethics is the description of how we act and how we essentially apply our moral sensibilities. I think honorably is a term I would use to describe people who commit to a high standard of ethics and deliver on that commitment. It's not just acting in a way that is minimally acceptable. It's not just complying with minimal norms. To act really honorably is to be utterly trustworthy.
You've raised a lot of interesting issues, and I want to particularly pursue product development, innovation, and trust. But before we do that, let me tell our listeners a little bit more about you.
Terrific.
Dr. Charles Chad Weinstein provides leadership and development and strategic consulting for business organizations, healthcare, and public sector entities, and law enforcement. He's also the author of Thinking Aloud, Reflections on Ethical Leadership. He is the president and founder, as he said, of Ethical Leaders in Action. Prior to establishing his company, he founded the Hill Center for Ethical Business Leadership, a division of the James Hill Library. In that capacity, he developed and implemented contemporary approaches to leadership development, using classical concepts drawn from multiple ethical traditions. I want to talk to you about multiple ethical traditions because we've got a global audience here and they deal with multiple ethical traditions around the world and multiple cultures.
Absolutely.
Anyway, before we go on further, Chad is also an adjunct faculty member of the Carlson School of Management at the University of Minnesota. He's been an educator, manager, and consultant for more than 25 years, serving industries ranging from consumer products to medical devices, pharmaceuticals to mining and petroleum extraction. Sounds like we have similar practices.
Yes.
Anyway, I met Chad when we were both working for Guideline Incorporated. He was the vice president of client services for its technology consulting arm. Chad holds a PhD in ethics from the University of Minnesota, and I am delighted that you're here and delighted to reconnect with you.
I could not agree more. Thank you so much, Tay.
What do you consider the key aspects of ethical leadership? When I was looking at your book, you had five, and it almost looked like the description of a diamond.
That's right. There are really five virtues or qualities in individuals that I urge my clients and the people with whom we work to develop in themselves in order to achieve the goal of ethical leadership. And let me not mince words here. When I'm talking about ethical leadership, I'm talking about the capacity and the willingness to empower others to improve the world. Now, that is something that a business leader often says, "Hey, you know, that's not my job. My job is to create value, run a profitable enterprise, achieve our growth objectives, whatever those intermediate business objectives might be." And I believe that empowering others to improve the world is entirely consistent with those business objectives. I believe that if we aim to act in ways that bring out the best in others, and we aim people at purposes that matter, we can do so extraordinarily profitably, and we can create unique value by doing so. So the heart of ethical leadership is the intent and the ability to empower others to make a positive difference out there. The qualities in us that make us able to do that, that you're referring to, we call virtues of ethical leadership, following a Greek tradition, although the Chinese Confucian traditions also adopt a similar conception of virtue, interestingly. But virtues are qualities in us that make us suitable for achieving a purpose. So virtues aren't good in and of themselves. Virtues are good relative to a purpose. And for this purpose of leadership and empowerment, we advocate cultivating the capabilities of service, competence, creativity, clarity, and courage. Those interrelated abilities and dispositions and desires make us effective as ethical leadership, as ethical leaders, rather, over time.
Let's take an example, right straight to the bottom line. How do we create value? You use these five virtues to improve your customer relations and to improve your bottom line from sales, from services.
It's a great question. Let's start down the value chain at the intersection between the customer, between the company and the customer. Great salespeople are people who are service oriented. They develop those relationships over time because the customer really knows that they care about doing the right thing, and the good salesperson cares about the success of his or her customer very, very intensely and very intimately. And that, you can't fake that. So that's the virtue of service. That great salesperson also has to be competent, needs to understand the customer's business, and needs to understand his or her products and services and where they intersect to create real value. There's a high level of competence associated with that. There's a requirement for clarity, both the ability to communicate and especially the ability to listen. There may be a requirement for some level of creativity. Let's try to create something that hasn't been done before. Let's do it better this time than we did last time. And frankly, there's always a requirement for courage. You got to be willing to put it out there. A great salesperson has got to be willing to say, you know what, we're not the right fit right now. That requires tremendous courage. It also requires clarity. So even at that point in the value creation chain between the company and the customer, you can see all of those virtues in action.
It seems to me that a lot of companies don't value their customers. I'm thinking of the kind of mistakes, the kind of products that are seriously flawed that have been put out on the market. Just, you know, three leap to mind: General Motors, J&J, Takeda airbags. How does that relate to valuing your customers and creating customer value?
Well, I think that some of those are tragic stories in a sense. You talk about J&J. The very companies that were implicated recently in all kinds of inappropriate behavior about their product used to be absolute exemplars of customer value. When you and I were both serving some of those companies, we, with the J&J as an example, the credo of Johnson & Johnson was a credo that put the patient and the caregiver and the customers and the communities first, and the employees and then the shareholders, and recognized that by doing that, by acting in the interest of those other stakeholders, the shareholders inherently benefited. And that credo served them to be, led them to become one of the greatest companies in healthcare and in any other sector.
I remember when they were the exemplar for crisis management during the Tylenol scandal.
They were absolutely the model. It's a perfect example, and it's a model that is still taught today. And unfortunately, today, when I teach that in a business school class, I also have to teach the coda ending of the same company hiring consultants to pull faulty products off the shelf to avoid an involuntary recall. And what changed between then and now? Well, the corporate culture changed. The pharmaceutical side of the business came to be managed by the consumer product side of the business, which was led and dominated by companies that were acquired, and short-term shareholder gain was valued over the customer experience and patient safety. And what used to be an inviolable quality process came to be known as, and I quote, the Easy Pass system.
On that note, Chad, I'm hearing from the station, we've got to go to break. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the second segment of Global Reach, Winning in World Markets. This is your host, Tay Revez, and I'm here with my guest, Chad Weinstein, and we are talking about ethics, leadership, and the bottom line. So when we went to break, we were talking about Johnson & Johnson. It used to be the exemplar for good corporate ethics. And they had a pretty damn good bottom line. Now, what happened to J&J after the scandal broke?
You know, I was not intimate with that, and so my knowledge is no better than any of your listeners, but what should have happened was a reckoning about how we or they came to this point and what that means about the viability of the brand and what is lost in terms of a culture of, that was capable of reliable, effective innovation, and that enjoyed the trust of a global marketplace.
You know, what worries me is it seems that many companies haven't moved off the point that Nader was writing about, what, back in the 50s, unsafe at any speed.
Uh-huh.
We still have that kind of corporate, fudging. And maybe it's a lack of courage, but they also talked about the GM deafness, the GM non-speak.
Right.
When you work with companies, how do you advise a company to get around that?
Well, typically a company engages our firm because they already have a desire to commit to something bigger than short-term thinking and bigger than transactional interactions with customers. People, by the time a firm comes to us, they really have come to see at some level the strategic advantage of thinking about ethics in a positive and affirmative sense and thinking about how they can differentiate themselves through ethical leadership. So the biggest challenge is in some ways already met, has already been met in that they see a potential strategic advantage from operationalizing a commitment to doing the right thing in a broad sense. Then we work together to operationalize that, to first of all clarify what is their sense of purpose, what is the unique value that they bring, what should customers trust them for, what assertions should they be making in their marketplaces about who they are, what they stand for, and the value that they bring and that they create. Then we talk about the means of leading an entire organization of people to deliver on those promises over time, and the courage of senior leaders to take the financial hit when that's what's required in order to deliver on that value proposition.
Now, you talk about taking a financial hit, but you also mentioned something that we've dealt with on this show before. You talked about the short term, short-termism.
Mm-hmm.
One of my most frequent guests is Charlie Cobb, who used to be the head of the Committee on Economic Development, which is a CEO think tank. And he, and we have another guest, Bob Monks, who wrote a really interesting book called Citizens Disunited.
Yeah.
Again, looking at corporate boards and the dysfunction of corporate boards and CEOs and shareholders that don't pay attention. And really look at that as undercutting the effectiveness of corporations and their ability to innovate and their long-term viability. So you put something interesting in your book where you talked about the fact that this concentration on creating shareholder value can actually undercut shareholder value. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I would be happy to. And I would also say I've heard those interviews, and I'm humbled to be in the great company of some of you and some of your other guests as well. The point I was making in the book, Thinking Aloud, was that there is a paradox in thinking only about short-term gain leads us to neglect a realm of opportunities that would be available if we were thinking more broadly. And so, in fact, thinking about short-term gain may be less likely to lead us to that short-term gain. I made the point with an analogy. If you were a hedonist as an individual, that is to say, you believe that what you sought in life was pleasure, period, and you set about to make your life as pleasurable as possible, what you did at every turn was say, what would be the most fun right now? You, in fact, would have a less pleasurable life than if you focused on something else, like building meaningful relationships or pursuing a hobby or a passion or something that requires us to focus away from the immediate short-term gain and rather on things that have the opportunity to deliver greater pleasure over time. The analogy for the business is if we think about creating value and delighting customers, and we look for ways to do that increasingly efficiently, we will achieve profitability, we can achieve growth, we can achieve market expansion, we can achieve all of the business goals that would lead us to that those financial gains. But we can do so in a way that's sustainable over time and in ways that are not available to the person who is only looking for the short-term business gain.
How do you create value over time when you have corporations where the average life of the CEO might be 2 years? What, when people really are bouncing around from company to company?
Well, this is one of those instances where it's easy for me to say and hard for great leaders to do. But one of the things that some organizations have done have been to set realistic, longer-term goals and to advise potential shareholders, in institutions and individuals, that they should expect to be in this for the longer haul, that this is a firm whose strategic play is the creation of value over time, and to set those expectations for shareholders and to be very transparent about what they will do and what they won't do in pursuit of their short-term financial objectives. And that is easy for someone like me to say and harder for a corporate management team to do, but it is doable and the payoff is significant.
Give us an example.
Well, I think there have been a number of examples in recent and not so recent years where organizations have said, we're going to retrench to some degree, and here's what you can expect. And some of the markets have rewarded them. I'm at a loss for specific examples, but I'll give that a little bit of thought.
Okay. Let me go back to some of the bottom line aspects. So talk about how do you have corporate ethics or social responsibility? How do you use that to create a competitive advantage in the supply chain?
It's a great question. One of the firms with whom I worked and learned a great deal was a firm called Control Products Corporation that was at the time led by a CEO who was unfortunately no longer with us. But the firm continues and is very, very strong. Control Products makes electronic equipment, or rather the electronic monitors for equipment like industrial fryers, industrial cooking equipment, and industrial controls. So they have to work very intimately both up their supply chain and down to their customers to engineer their products appropriately. They developed a program where they were completely transparent, both with suppliers and customers, about their costs, their design processes, their sales projections and expectations, and so forth. And that allowed everyone in that supply chain to take out the fudge factors that they were creating to protect themselves against Control Products not delivering on their expectations. And Control Products worked and strived to continually deliver on those refined expectations. So by doing that, everyone in that supply chain achieved literally unprecedented profitability, 10, 15, 20% more profitability than they did in the more arm's-length supply chains where they participated, because they could trust one another and therefore could avoid the waste involved in protecting themselves against one of their trading partners letting them down.
Interesting.
Another great example in the food industry, I can't name the company, but one of the very recognizable consumer food companies worked with their farmers and natural food suppliers to create essentially shared value exchanges to take the sting out of the volatility of the commodities pricing so that they were buying products at a predictable markup, but at a floating price, so that those producers could take risks and the producers could thereby drive their costs down and ensure a reliable supply chain, even in a volatile market. And that happened because the large company was able to take some of the risk out for another company. I've got one more example if we have time for it.
Okay. Very quick, yeah.
Very quickly. A company that made precision machining bought precious metals, including platinum, which was very volatile. They worked with their broker to share profits in exchange for extending their own secured line of credit to that broker, all based on trust. They had access to capital that was much less expensive than the broker's because it was secured by their capital plant. And so by working together, they used the broker's expertise and the customer's access to capital to achieve an outcome that neither could achieve on their own.
Now, that's really interesting. We got to go to break. When we come back, I want to talk about who are the stakeholders in a company. And also, our listeners are global listeners. I mean, they have businesses in 5, 10, up to 100 countries. Each of those countries have different cultures, and ethics can be different from culture to culture. And I want to know how you develop a system that works globally. But we're going to do that when we come back, because there's no more time in this segment.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the next segment of Global Reach. This is your host, Tay Revez, and I'm here with my guest and friend, Chad Leinstein. Chad, when we went to break, I started to raise the issue of stakeholders. You know, we've all been raised on that 1970 Milton Friedman quote from, was it the New York Times?
That's right.
There is one and only one social responsibility of business: to use its resources and engage in activity designed to increase profits so long as it stays within the rules of the game. And more recently, I had Edmund Phelps on the show, and we were talking about corporate stakeholders. And he was tending to the view that it's really the shareholder or the beneficial owners of a company are the only two stakeholders. Now, what's your view of that?
I think it's fascinating that people still uphold that view. Milton Friedman wrote that article in September of 1970 in the New York Times Magazine, and he did it deliberately to be provocative, and he subsequently said that his aim was to start or accelerate a conversation, stimulate a conversation, and it certainly has for more than 40 years.
Not create the gospel.
That's right. Even Milton Friedman, said, look, I argued that the only social responsibility of business was to increase profits for shareholders, but the way to do that is by attending to the needs of other stakeholders. So even Milton Friedman himself acknowledged that that isn't the only thing that smart business leaders do. A stakeholder is, by definition, an entity, a group, or an individual who has a stake in a business because that business requires the relationship with the stakeholder in order for it to thrive or to exist. So shareholders are, of course, stakeholders. But if they were the only stakeholder, the business couldn't in any way thrive or exist.
I think you know I'm of your opinion, and I have been since I was at Business International.
Yes.
I think we have to look at, as we've been talking about, your suppliers, your customers, your employees. But I think, wouldn't you go even further?
I would. I believe the communities in which we do business are also stakeholders. I believe that no business could thrive without the social supports or even the infrastructural supports of the communities. You need roads or railroads. You need water. You need air. We want the employees to benefit from decent schools. So the communities are stakeholders in these businesses as well.
Now, you even had an essay in your book saying that the environment is a stakeholder.
Environment is an interesting example of a stakeholder, because other stakeholders we can have contractual arrangements with. The environment isn't an entity as such, but I think that the environmental impact of a business is so significant to everyone, really, in our interconnected planet, that it does us well as managers to think of the environment as its own stakeholder, perhaps as a surrogate for all of the beings that exist in that environment. So in other words, while the environment isn't the same kind of stakeholder directly as customers or even communities of people, as managers, we can make better decisions by thinking about our impact on the environment in sort of the same way that we would think about our impact on the community or our impact on employees. It is a metaphorical stakeholder, but we would do well to think of it as a stakeholder.
Now, some years ago, I interviewed the CEO of Shaw Carpets, and they approach the environment in a couple of ways. One, in terms of the working environment for employees, by which I mean that they created factories with a lot of light, clean air, pay attention to that, and actually saw employee health go up, health costs go down, and absenteeism go down. But they also, out of concern for the environment, they created 100% recyclable carpet tiles.
Which fabulous.
Sound like a big deal, but one of the dirtiest things are used carpets.
Absolutely.
And they created actually an extremely attractive and profitable product line. They built a whole factory to do this. I know this because I was tracking it for one of their competitors.
Ah.
Anyway, but it was fascinating. They hired top designers to design, and it was the most interesting product. And I think we have some examples of others that, you know, do both. But let's look at some of the other stakeholder relationships. Think about this. Some of the companies that we're working with are huge. They are in 100 countries. They are interacting with communities all over the place. How do you create policies that, let's go back to ethical policies for dealing with communities? Very, very diverse communities. This reminded me of another environmental disaster, which was Bhopal.
Mm-hmm.
And what that did. We covered that when I was at Business International, what that did to the company. Anyway, go on.
Well, if the question is, how do organizations create policies and act in ways that are ethical with respect to their stakeholder relationships when those stakeholders are in multiple cultures and countries around the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that we don't do is try to do it unilaterally. One of the biggest mistakes that organizations make, sometimes with the best of intentions, and sometimes not just corporations but development organizations, is to embrace a unilateral perspective on some aspect of ethics and to seek to impose that around the world without conversation. I think about some of the development agencies that are trying to improve access to water and sanitation in the developing world, which is an utterly admirable. In fact, it's an unambiguously excellent goal. Great thing to do. But for 20 years, some of these organizations and agencies tried to do it more or less unilaterally, to come in and say, this is the way we build wells, this is the way we build septic systems, this is the way we will do it for you. And so the systems themselves were underutilized and unmaintained and failed because they weren't developed in a way that was attentive to the local culture. So the first thing we need to do, even with the best of intentions, is to engage in an ongoing, substantive conversation with the people with whom we're doing business in their cultures and seek to understand how we can uphold ethical principles in ways that are truly culturally sensitive. Now, I believe that there are some absolutes, but those absolutes are fewer than we might imagine. And in general, in conversation, we can achieve better ethical outcomes overall than we could with a monologue.
You know, it's funny when you were talking about the Wells. It reminds me, actually, of when I did my senior thesis, which was on cross-cultural communication.
Mm-hmm.
And I interviewed an aid worker who had been in Cambodia, and one of his jobs was to build wells.
Okay.
And they brought the concrete, and they had all the stuff there. And in Southeast Asia, they have a different sense of time
mm-hmm.
than Americans do. Americans seem to see life in 5 or 15-minute segments.
Mm-hmm.
So concept of deadline was very different, and until he could connect it with the monsoons are coming, and you're going to lose this, and you're going to lose face, once he was able to do that, the villagers built the well.
Mm-hmm.
The artificial deadline of September 15th couldn't get the well moving.
Right. Not surprising when you think about it. We tend to take things for granted. We tend to take for granted, as you say, that concept of time. We may take for granted a high level of focus on individual rights because we in America are radically individualistic as a culture. In other cultures, what matters morally is not as much the individual as the group. So we have to stop taking those things for granted and begin to listen to what is morally relevant to our trading partners and ultimately achieve a level of agreement about what we can expect of one another and then work to uphold that agreement and when we make mistakes, adjust over time. Some other things that we take for granted, differing conceptions of candor and differing levels of commitment. We take for granted that when a contract is signed between strangers, that contract feels binding to all the parties. We ought not take those things for granted. Rather, we ought to have a conversation, establish shared expectations for our working relationships, articulate those shared expectations, manage to them, and adjust appropriately over time.
So let me give you a hypothetical, Chad. Suppose you were in a session with a U.S. company, very much, you know, contract-driven, and a vendor in a country where what is more important is family, and that's the top value. And anybody outside the group is a little bit outside the ethical boundaries. How mm-hmm. would you bring them together in a shared expectation?
Well, it is a
this isn't very fair of me to
we've been involved in some of those conversations, and the way that we do it typically is by acknowledging the challenge and establishing what is ultimately a shared vision, which is prosperously doing business together and what that looks like, and then facilitating ongoing conversations, often over meals. Meals are a very powerful transcultural force. But a series of conversations about where those expectations differ and where they can meet in a way that makes sense for all parties involved.
You know, I'm thinking of this in places, and we're going to go to break in a second, but where things could come in place where you depend on your vendors, and if your vendors give you adulterated products, if your vendors have different labor standards than your customers will accept, that can do a lot of things to your reputation and your brand. So I think some of this is about brand protection and we're right back to bottom line protection. Got to go to break now. When we come back, I want to talk more about this area and a little bit about corporate bullying and what that can cost in a company. But that's in about 2 minutes.
We'll be right back. Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the final segment of Global Reach Winning in World Market. I'm here with my guest and friend, Chad Weinstein, and we are talking about ethics on the bottom line in a multicultural business. So pushing this further, how do you improve your value proposition ethically, multiculturally? The wide open question.
It is a wide open question. The first thing that we do with organizations to improve their value proposition is to evaluate from an outside perspective where that value really lies. And that means asking customers and potential customers and even looking at competitors and their customers and trying to understand what do the people who are purchasing the value really see. From there, we can step backwards to look at how the firm really creates that value and then look at ways to improve the profitability of it. That's pretty standard management consulting of the sort that you've done a lot of. The ethical lens here is we are looking to create real demonstrable value as opposed to creating a mere story that might sell for shareholders or to create the perception or to sell something that we as providers see as valuable rather than listening for and delivering something that our customers see as valuable. So one of the points of intersection between ethics and performance is in that linkage and that deep, trust-based, candid, substantive customer relationship. Another link is having a relationship with your employee base so that you can meet their needs and create a highly engaged workforce so that they are committed to delivering on this enhanced value proposition.
Now, how do you do that at a time when so many companies look at their employees basically the same way they look at their inventory, pretty much disposable?
Those firms are making a huge mistake, and they're leaving a tremendous opportunity for productivity on the table. I work with a firm here in the upper Midwest of the United States that competes globally in metal stamping and metal forming. They compete in markets that have very low labor rates and that are unconstrained by environmental considerations, and they prosper. They are among the 95th percentile of profitable manufacturers in the United States, and they pay their workers 120% of the mean for their industry. So they have an inherently very expensive workforce that is phenomenally productive and delivers phenomenal return on investment because they are extraordinarily engaged, because those workers feel a stake. And the reason they feel a stake is because their employer, first of all, provides for their safety and makes them partners in ongoing safety. This firm goes literally decades without worse work loss injuries. Second, asks those employees constantly for ways to improve their workforce and workplace. And that comes down to, in one instance, and I'll tell you, it's snowing out my window right now, so this is a relevant example. They talked with their workforce and saved an enormous amount of their energy bill by lowering the temperature in some areas of their plants and issuing OSHA-approved, safe, tearaway fleece jackets to the workers who were generally hot, not cold. And it was only by listening to their workers that they were able to realize that savings. That's a trivial example, but when you stack it up, this workforce generates 400 to 500 suggestions a year for how to improve quality and how to lower cost.
Because we don't only have about 5 minutes left, I wanted to address three things actually, bullying, courage, and innovation.
Terrific.
And they're linked, as I hope our listeners will hear in a minute. Bullying, we worry about childhood bullying, but bullying is rampant in corporations.
Absolutely.
People are, just talk about the cost of bullying in a couple of sentences and what that relation is to innovation, and then how you put courage into the organization. But let me ask prompts while we're going.
First of Bob Sutton, Professor Robert Sutton, wrote an outstanding book on bullying and its costs called, and I forgive me if the term is not printable or appropriate, The No Asshole Rule. That's the title of the book. He makes the business case that we have a myth in our country that if you're a top performer, you can get away with abysmal behavior, because of your performance. You can treat people horribly because you earn it by your performance. And Sutton makes the case with hard numbers. There is no way to overcome the enormous cost of bullying. A bully costs you, no matter how much they sell, no matter how brilliant and innovator they are, they cost you because the best people leave around them, and the people who stay don't speak up and don't take risks and don't speak their minds, and the company suffers inevitably. And the numbers are there. Bullying literally costs more than any productivity could overcome.
Okay, so how do you overcome that? How do you engender courage in a corporation?
It's a great question. Courage happens in an individual who exists in an environment. So we create courage in an environment by, first of all, focusing on a vision of what we stand for as an organization and what our expectations of one another are and what our standards are for how we behave toward one another.
So how does a leader, Chad, discourage bullying?
The leader doesn't tolerate bullying. The leader first establishes expectations that we will treat each other with respect and dignity, and we will not use our power to diminish the people around us, because we need everyone around us at our best. And once the leaders of the organization have established that expectation and instantiated it in specific terms, then those leaders hold people accountable when they violate those expectations consistently over time.
You know, we've got about 2 minutes left. So what are the most important takeaways for our listeners? What can they put into practice tomorrow?
I think you've done a great job touching on some of them. I think within our organizations, we need to create cultures that tend to promote engagement, that bring out the best in people and motivate them to bring their best to work. With outside stakeholders, customers, vendors, the communities in which we do business, we need to be forthright, we need to seek partnerships, and we need to act in ways that promote trust over time. And by doing those things, we put ourselves in a position to prosper commercially.
Okay, we've got one more minute, and in 1 minute, can you tell me, how do we turn a vision statement from words on the wall to a strategic tool? In about 30 seconds.
First, We make concrete expectations that lead to the realization of that vision, and we live those expectations every day. Second, we collect and tell the stories of excellence and of the heroes who make that vision real, and we make those stories a real living part of our culture day to day.
Chad, how can our listeners reach you?
I would be delighted to talk to any of our listeners. Please reach me at www.ethinact.com, ethinact.com.
And if you have any issues that you'd like me to explore on this show, or you want to propose a guest or ask a question, you can reach me at PRR@globalreach-SBI, StephenBoyIceCream.com, or Strategic Business Intelligence. Or click on the link on my host page on the Voice America website. So on behalf of my guest, Chad Weinstein, and myself, I want to thank you for listening. Chad, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And we both wish you great success in extending your global reach. Tune in next week.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.